At the Legislature, a review of news and opinion from the Ontario political scene, summarized by a member of CJRT's Queen's Park Bureau. Here now, at the Legislature, is Bob Carr.
In recent months, my wife has taken to horseback riding. Health Minister Potter has his budget approved for the year, $2 billion. Old folks will get a $50 bonus this Christmas, but the opposition doesn't think it's enough, and here comes another busload of school children. Very interesting, Carr. Interesting, you may say, but it lacks continuity, unity, coherence. The legislature's about to wrap up this session. Can't tell you precisely when. Won't be today, that's for sure. Why is it that all the pundits who don't work here were so cocksure the House would finish its work this week? Would you believe mid-December? Please, God, not at 4 or 5 in the morning, not after half a dozen all-night sessions. Get to it, Carr. Oh, I see you grow impatient. You'd like to see the point of all this. Well, I've nothing against horseback riding. I want to say that right off. I like to see a powerful horse in capable hands, sensitive hands, going through his paces. I like the roughness of the wood in the stables, the creak of leather in the silence of a woodland, the coarse hair of a man's mane. But horseback riding costs money. Ever notice that? It costs a lot of money if you're serious about it. Not just for the lessons for a beginner. They were quite reasonable. But the lessons were just the tip of the iceberg. Along came the cap, the crop, the boots, the jodhpurs, the gloves. Well, as much fun as it may be, horseback riding can be a long-range commitment. Worst of all, it's addictive. Besides, as Lisa discovered, when a horse steps on your foot, you know you've been stepped on. It can be painful, and it can be dangerous. Which is maybe why I don't quarrel with Medicare. Basically, I thought the whole scheme was pretty stupid when the federal government rammed it down the throats of this government. In case your memory's short, let me encapsulate what happened way back then. The federal government collects tax money from you and I, basically for federal programs. Well, that's the common misconception. Actually, the biggest chunk of the federal tax money goes to the provinces for one scheme or another. Like the man says, pay the piper, call the tune. Well, with all that money, the federal government said, you're bringing in Medicare. You can't have this basket full of money unless you bring in Medicare, too. That's the only purpose for which you can have this loot. Well, Premier Robarts kicked and screamed and tried to get the booty for other purposes, but eventually caved in. We introduced OMSIP with Health Minister Matt Diamond. Doc Diamond didn't mind that very much at all. You see, for years around Port Perry, Matt had satisfied himself with fresh chickens and eggs in payment for bills from patients unwilling or unable to fund medical care. And being a family doctor, a farm doctor, a community doctor, you remember those types of doctors? A conscientious doctor, he had administered medical care to the best of his ability and satisfied himself with payment from people to the best of their ability. He took Medicare. Robarts accepted Medicare. And the millennium was supposed to be right on the heels of Medicare. Mind you, some of the ghosts that Robarts saw, stalking the hallways, did come here to Queen's Park. Some very excellent private Medicare schemes went down the drain. PSI took a hammering. Windsor Medical was wiped out. And the costs of Medicare skyrocketed. As Dr. Richard Potter puts it after all, we now run an operation as large as General Motors. Potter says, with that size of an organization, there are all kinds of controls on spending, but the opposition doesn't believe him. They say he's mismanaged the scheme. They say he should resign. Well, maybe. Maybe Potter should. He's had troubles with his own health, and out of affection for the mule-headed cabinet minister from Belleville, I've often thought he should get out of the game. But that night Bob Nixon flailed Potter's denturist bill, that night that Frank Dre insisted Medicare wasn't a private club for the doctors, that night raw fury boiled across the House in debate. And few people were here to see it. Relatively few members of the government benches, few reporters, practically no members of the general public. Cue camera two. 20 opposition members of the legislature spoke to Premier Davis's proposal for a $50 Christmas bonus last night, a bonus in the stockings of old folks this year, a $50 bonus. Not the first time, I guess we've had this 4 years running now, but not for everyone, just the folks getting supplementary assistance because they don't have the cash for a Merry Christmas. 20 opposition members hammered at the government. A $50 bonus is an insult, a bribe, they called it, and deep inside, they thanked Zeus that it wasn't an election year. They insisted on more. What more? A minimum guaranteed $200 pension a month, they said late last night. The Tories said that was too rich for their blood. The Tories. Back in the bush, around Blind River, according to friendly little Bernd Gilbertson, and around Pembroke, according to Paul Yakubowski, father of a dozen, the folks wouldn't stand for a $50 million giveaway. The cabinet minister sat there. They'd forgotten the welfare mothers who begged for an extra $50 to brighten Christmas for the children a couple of years ago, and they were told no. They'd forgotten that the problems of old people run deep and swift. That $50 hardly buys Christmas dinner for the family if Grandma has her brood gathered round this year. That $50 hardly pays the plane fare for Granddad to fly in from Thunder Bay to Toronto this Christmas, let alone bring presents. All they could see was this $17 million handout, and it warmed the cockles of their hearts. What Treasurer White pointed out, and the opposition failed to seize on this, to exploit it, to follow the reasoning to its logical end, was that pension benefits were being increased this year for some old folks through better housing by Ontario Housing, through tax rebates, through pension plan monies to OMERS, that's the municipal employees' plan, and through teacher superannuation. Had you been sitting in the gallery last night, you probably would have recognized the provincial government was providing more and more for old folks, but not evenly, not equitably, and doing it by benefit of the earnings of people whose parents and grandparents are supposed to clutch the $50 bill to the breast, put on another sweater, turn down the thermostat, and cry Hosanna. And here comes another busload of children. The legislature is one of those absolutely essential places for school children to visit. It ranks in the minds of school trustees with the Royal Ontario Museum, Ontario Place, the X, Casa Loma, maybe even the planetarium. It's sort of an educational tourist trap, and the yellow buses roll in. The kids are discharged in rather disorderly ranks. They're lined up and sorted out to ensure that all the faces appear in the class picture. The local member of the legislature stands up front. The flash goes poof, and another three dozen youngsters officially, legitimately have arrived. Now, the kids are introduced to the legislature at 2 o'clock this afternoon. They tour the buildings, they look at the paintings, they look at the rocks under glass, they look at the chisel scribbles in the walls, and they're supposed to be impressed. But it bores them, and they yak and giggle and snicker and gossip, and the best thing about the building, they confide to the blue-coated guide, is he's got them off those damn buses. All in all, they see Bob Nixon and Steve Lewis, or alternately, Ian Deans and Jim Brightup, pepper the cabinet with questions. The give and take is rapid fire, filled with guffaws and catcalls and knowing grins. And they come away older and wiser and taller and stronger, their spines straighter, their brains stuffed with unique and valuable knowledge. Bunk. They come to see the circus. They see the legislature at its worst, where men in control of millions of dollars fire from the lip, and where the opposition improvises questions about matters of urgent public importance. They see the flack. They hear the roar. They teeter in the rows of seats in the visitors' gallery, and they furrow their brows over the seating plan in the legislature. Now, if people spent less time horseback riding, if they were interested in these millions of dollars, if they cared about the old people, there wouldn't be room for the school kids here at Queen's Park. Politics is not a game for kids. It's a multi-million dollar lottery where carefully plotted speeches, chalked with things you never knew, but which you always wanted to know, are delivered to empty benches and met by yawns and groans. If you like the barnyard, there's more than a passing resemblance here at night. But the action is not at 2 in the afternoon during the question period. You can read what happens then in the papers, hear it on radio, see it on TV. The action is after supper when you're looking at the TV guide and saying you wish there was something to do. In the next couple of weeks, you have an unparalleled opportunity to save energy around the house and to treat yourself to a prickle of the brain, a ripple in the old gray matter. In the week or so before things wind up here at the legislature, the tone of desperation that creeps into late-night debate and the clear apathy on the faces of the backbenchers will be more and more clear as debate struggles through the dark hours. Do yourself a favor. Turn down the thermostat. Turn off the light. Make it a point to see the stars you won't find at the planetarium. See the dusty, moldy procedure hidden from visitors to Casa Loma. See the knights without armor, wielding weapons unlisted at the Royal Ontario Museum, and visit the place where lack of interest, where government arrogance, and occasionally irresponsible remarks by the opposition have made Canada's second largest government the biggest one-horse show in Ontario. You know, unless people really become interested in what goes on here in debate, the best parts of the legislature will remain obscure, mysterious, well into the new year. At the legislature, this is Bob Carr.
Join us again next Wednesday afternoon at 1:20 for At the Legislature. At that time, you'll hear another roundup of news and opinion from the Ontario political scene, presented by a member of CJRT's Queen's Park branch.
Through a haze of booze, we look at the news. Derwin Smith, Chris Rose,
and Bob Carr present
Queen's Park Christmas Report 1973.
Thank you, Bob, and good evening, everyone. The dark specter of sex scandal fell over the Ontario legislature today when NDP leader Stephen Lewis rocked the province with allegations of cabinet perversion.
John Clement is in bed with the multinational oil companies. He doesn't like that phrase, but that's what it amounts to.
You also claim, Mr. Lewis, that oil companies aren't the only bed partners of the minister.
The banks will be satisfied, the mortgage companies will be satisfied, everybody will be satisfied.
But what about Fern Gendon? He doesn't look too satisfied.
Fern Gendon may be suffering his normal Friday morning miseries, you know.
Serious charges from the NDP leader. We sought out the Minister of Consumer and Commercial Relations for comment on these allegations and found John Clement at the Press Lounge Bar. Mr. Clement, what exactly are you doing?
Buying a bottle and figuring out the per ounce cost.
Well, Mr. Clement, if the bottle's too expensive, what'll it be?
A six-pack.
Elsewhere in the news this evening, word that a band of conservative thugs have beaten up Mike Cassidy outside his home in Toronto Island. Mike, thug spokesmen say you had it coming with your nasty attitude towards Premier Davis.
I asked for it in the spring. I didn't get it. Nothing happened. I asked again for it in the fall. They said, well, it might be coming. And it was finally given to me down in the estimates committee.
Well, Mike, now that we're talking with you, we understand you're now living out on Toronto Island. What's it like out there, Mike, and what kind of a place are you living in?
In an old, badly insulated, run-down house, as many low-income and welfare people have to.
Surely you're not living on welfare. What does Stephen Lewis pay you for those long hours of speech writing?
I estimate about a dime an hour.
The roving Queen's Park microphone also found time today to conduct an interview with Pasquale DiGiuseppe, speechwriter and advisor to Solicitor General John Yaremko. How are Mr. Yaremko's speech lessons coming?
That is rotten, it is no good, though.
Thanks very...
We like to give it that, the same continuum what was before.
Thanks very much,
see,
Mr. DiGiuseppe.
One buyer liked in a continuum, new one, paper.
Thank you.
We can put it
thanks
that.
Very
that's
much,
matter,
Mr. DiGiuseppe.
No,
thank you, Mr.
Like
DiGiuseppe. Well, that's my
just
time for this time, and I'll see you next time. Derwin Smith you, now turning you over to Chris Rose for the top story to this hour.
Premier William Davis today called for the winter recess of Ontario's legislature, but he had a surprise. Mr. Davis says provincial government is far too inefficient, far too slow and cumbersome. With the Tories' overwhelming majority, he has pushed through reforms to the Legislative Assembly Act, which gives complete power of government to the cabinet and sends the opposition packing. Education Minister Thomas Wells considers the new legislation a major breakthrough.
We've removed a lot of the deadwood. Obviously, the people of this province feel that that should be in there.
NDP leader Stephen Lewis says the government's latest move is more than just an amendment to the Legislative Assembly Act.
Outright defiance of the act.
Federal Liberal Member of Parliament Norm Caffick thinks the uproar is a tempest in a teapot.
Sometimes even when you lose, you win.
Port Arthur New Democrat Jim Folds doesn't agree with Caffick.
Seems to me to be unjust.
Commercial Affairs Minister John Clement says it was a necessary move since the opposition was becoming less effective each day.
There's a very great social problem in that particular area with the overconsumption of beverage alcohol.
NDP House Leader Ian Dean says he wasn't surprised by the move.
Yeah, in fact, they've been talking about it since 67 that I know of.
However, former Premier John Robart says he doesn't understand what the opposition is squawking about.
The minority can't rule the majority. Minorities not only want to be heard, but they want their opinion to predominate.
Premier Davis told us he will not need an opposition with the new group of advisors who have joined his staff. The Premier says his new group will be called the Organization, and he doesn't like other names offered up for the group.
The term mafia was, shall we say, in quotes, a popular connotation.
Asked if he had a similar diplomatic name for what they will do, the Premier replied,
What term is better than organized crime?
Meanwhile, former Premier Robart says Mr. Davis's move was the obvious one to make.
If you don't do what they say, then you're going to get another parade and another parade.
Energy Minister Darcy McHugh, who's been in Alberta with Premier Lougheed, held a news conference shortly after the Premier made his statement.
I cannot tolerate these doubts. My decision to resign from the cabinet was made this morning.
Now here's a late bulletin. Let's go to Bob Carr.
Thank you very much, Chris. I'm here at a news conference with the federal conservative critic for justice, Alan Lawrence. Mr. Lawrence, having checked the precedent, says Mr. Davis's action is totally illegal.
The only alternative, in my mind, is the Honorable Robert L. Stanfield.
Back here in Toronto, Mr. Nixon has been asked by his supporters to go out in the streets and seek popular support to topple Mr. Davis.
I heard it said about me that I lack a certain something that you might be prepared to call charisma. That may be so.
Well, former Premier John Robart.
I just don't follow this particular line of thinking.
Sorry to interrupt, Chris, but we're here at the NDP headquarters where the supporters of Stephen Lewis have now called on him to make a clear statement on what he wants at this time.
Where is my wife? I want my wife.
Hold it, Bob. Over here at Liberal headquarters, Bob Nixon's supporters have been demanding an explanation not just of how such a thing could happen, but where he's been the last 20 minutes since Premier Davis made his announcement.
You know, where the hell was Nixon? Well, I'll tell you where I was. I was in every constituency of this province.
Now, the big question here at the legislature now is, if the Davis coup is successful, what next? Darcy McHugh for Premier of the province?
We haven't got that far in our thinking.
With Chris Rose and Derwin Smith at the legislature, this is Bob Carr.